right now there's plenty of pumping places in Australia that the media is overlooking because they tend to focus on the big cities.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Tyrone Shump, and in this episode, we'll continue our conversation with real estate researcher, writer, and businessman, Terry Ryder. Ryder is a founder and director of Hotspotting and provides people with information on the best places to invest around Australia. Keep listening to learn more about his predictions for the Australian property market. Throughout his investment career, Ryder believes in hindsight he could have made other decisions.
There's one in particular that I do wish I'd kept. It was my first house actually close to the centre of Brisbane, and it was quite a modest and ugly little place, and it cost, I recall, about $50,000, but it was on a great block of land. It was elevated with views looking up the Brisbane River to the Gateway Bridge, and I sold it for $110,000. So I doubled my money in a relatively short space of time. I thought I'd done very well, but I noticed last time I drove past it that someone had bought that, knocked it down and built a mansion on that block of land. So imagine what it would be worth today.
One of the lessons learned by Ryder on his journey is the importance of patience and persistence in the search for a property.
That good object lesson comes from some years ago trying to buy a property in regional New South Wales, and for a whole host of different reasons, every property I tried to buy, it just didn't come off. Someone bought it out from under my nose, or the vendor changed their mind and decided not to sell after I'd done a lot of work and spent a lot of money on searches and valuations, etc. And it just dragged on for months. But I persisted, and eventually I ended up getting a good property in that location. There's a number of lessons out of that, and that is it does happen that way sometimes, and you have to persist and be patient. And the other lesson was that never to be repeated bargains happen almost every day. So you think the property that your first target is the only one that's going to fulfill your dreams in that location, and you miss out, but another one that's even better will pop up if you persist. One of my mentoring clients has actually been through that process just in the last several months, just constant frustration of targeting properties that look great, exactly what we're looking for, and then for some reason someone beats them to it, or they do the building and pest inspection and find it's riddled with termites. It's taking him about 4 months. He's finally bought a property, and it's probably the best that we've looked at in that four-month process, and if he'd given up and lacked patience and persistence, he wouldn't have got there.
It's a lesson that even someone doing it as long as Ryder needs to be reminded of at times.
I've just relearned that lesson today, in fact, this morning. I'm looking to buy, I don't mind telling you, in Bendigo in Victoria, which I think is a market with a lot of potential right now and in the future. And the property that we were targeting has just been sort of snaffled from under our noses by another buyer. I've just applied the same attitude. That property was ideal for what we were looking for, but another one as good or probably better will pop up next week, probably, I'm sure. I'm totally unfazed by that. There was a time when I would have been devastated to have missed what appeared to be the perfect answer to my current criteria, but experience is a very valuable thing in real estate investment.
Ryder describes a realization that changed the investment game for him.
I think the aha moment was understanding that it's not about buying and selling, it's not about trading real estate. I mean, that's actually a very foolish way to go about it. Your selling and buying costs eat up so much of your capital gain that you've achieved. The aha moment was realizing that it was about accumulation of good assets. I think it might have been something that I read from Warren Buffett. I mean, he's one of the smartest people on the planet in terms of investing. He invests in share market type investments, not real estate so much, but a lot of his philosophy applies equally to real estate. And I remember him saying that he applies a strategy whereby it doesn't matter if they close the share market for the next 5 years, he's happy because he buys assets that are fundamentally long-term in value. He doesn't buy them with a view to selling them. He buys them because they're good assets, and he plans to keep them, you know, for the duration. And I think that's very true in real estate as well. It's about accumulating good assets and keeping them.
In a cooling market, Ryder also emphasizes the importance of adding value yourself.
More recently, I think the aha moment at some point in the recent past was that it's no longer about passive investment, as you might call it, where you buy something that's rentable and has the potential for capital growth and you wait for it to grow. Increasingly, investors, including myself, are looking for something to accelerate the process. So we're looking for all of that, but also something where you can add value, whether it's renovation, extension, building a granny flat, or subdividing or redeveloping in the future. I think it's about finding property that has the zoning and the land size and the potential to do something extra with. And what I'm currently looking for is very much fits that general category. It's something that's immediately rentable, but you can subdivide or build a second dwelling or perhaps redevelop with townhouses in the future.
Most importantly, be educated about your property and what you may be able to do with it.
A lot of properties already have the zoning in place, already has the what's required to do extra with it. Quite often the seller doesn't understand the potential themselves.
Ryder describes how his business works to find out the latest hotspots all around Australia.
We do have a report that I've got to update in the next week called How to Identify Hotspots. And there are certain characteristics that we look for. In fact, when I was going back more than a dozen years, when I was planning to create this business, I started out by doing a series of articles for Money Magazine where each of the series dealt with a different aspect that my research showed created hotspots. It might be the ripple effect. It might have been proximity to jobs nodes. I focused on each topic individually in a series of articles that were published in Money Magazine. I was doing the research not only to earn some money as a freelance writer at the time, but to create the research basis for the hotspotting business. And so when our research effort, we're looking for certain characteristics and events, and probably the single most important one, if I distill it all down to one word, the word is infrastructure. And a good location to buy in will have good existing infrastructure, but more particularly, the game changer will be planned new infrastructure.
Here's an example of this theory in practice.
Now, I'm in the Sunshine Coast hinterland. The Sunshine Coast is a great case study. 5 or 6 years ago, we included the Sunshine Coast in our no-go zones report because it was a poorly performing market, because essentially its economy was about tourism, which is a very fickle and volatile industry, very, very prone to downturn. And so real estate didn't perform very well. Noosa hadn't shown any growth for, you know, most of the last 10 years, for example, despite its iconic reputation. But something fundamentally changed, and it was through infrastructure spending. There's $20 billion worth happening in the Sunshine Coast. There's a medical precinct being created that wasn't there before. It's created a whole new industry for the Sunshine Coast, and it's brought a lot of new people to live there, many of them very well-paid people, and that's really given put a turbocharge onto the property market. And they're spending $500,000 on the airport. They're spending $1 billion right now on the motorway. There's a new CBD being created in Maroochydore. The biggest shopping centre on the Sunshine Coast is being expanded by $400 million. All these things are happening. Ewing Insurance has set up its national headquarters on the Sunshine Coast. That wouldn't have happened 5 years ago. So those are the sort of game-changing things that we're looking for, and it all centres around infrastructure.
Ryder puts growth in any market down to infrastructure spending.
I mean, I believe that the biggest single factor for Sydney's boom in the last 5 years until recently was the infrastructure spend. There's tens and tens of billions of dollars being spent on rail links and motorway upgrades and universities and hospitals, and that generates economic activity, it creates jobs, and out of that comes demand for real estate. The wealth it's created or helped to create has made the Sydney, New South Wales economy fundamentally the strongest economy in Australia, and that's generated a property boom. A lot of wealth has come out of that for Sydney.
He explains how some increased infrastructure can snowball into more and more growth.
I think the demand was there. It's the action of government that's been lagging. So the Sunshine Coast region was a growing region because it was, in terms of lifestyle, a good place to live. But medical services were falling behind, and there was a need for a new hospital. So they built a $2 billion one after much lobbying from local people. And then once that was established, someone decided, well, we're going to build a private hospital next to the public hospital, and then specialist medical buildings were built, and so suddenly this precinct evolved. So one thing led to another. And in the case of Sydney, there was a huge need for the infrastructure that they have been building over the last, say, 5 years, just that the previous government was... just not spending anything on infrastructure. It was so ridden by internal division and corruption and all sorts of distracting things that governance wasn't happening, and spending on necessary infrastructure got way behind. And more recently, they've caught up, and it's generated a strong economy. It's not the only factor, but it's been a big factor.
Another growth factor to look at is how proactive local councils are.
Similar with the Sunshine Coast, and there are other places. Geelong's a great example. That particular economy just outside of Melbourne is absolutely thriving. A lot of it's been generated by infrastructure spending. A feature I think that's underrated, and a lot of people wouldn't even think to look for, it's the importance of a proactive local council. A lot of the rising areas in terms of real estate have very strong proactive councils that go out there and actually encourage people to come and live, encourage people to come and invest and set up businesses. The Sunshine Coast definitely has that. Geelong definitely has that. These are economies in transition. Wollongong's another one. It used to be a smokestack economy, and now it's more about health and education and IT services. Geelong's very similar. It's evolved from the old blue-collar industries to modern industries, and that's been facilitated by ambitious local councils and also state governments to some extent.
Ryder discusses the importance of being educated and proactive in your investment decisions.
There are the processes that create these things are quite long and involved processes. So it starts with an idea, and then it becomes a proposal, and then there's some research, and there'll be some debate. And eventually it will happen, but it's quite a long, drawn-out process. So we've, to a certain extent, we're gathering it all together and taking a punt sometimes that something will happen. I mean, a game changer for the Redcliffe Peninsula in the north of Brisbane was the new rail link. That was promised for 50 years before they actually decided to do it and actually deliver it. But one of the interesting things about infrastructure is there's sort of three phases of growth. One is when they announce it, and then the second is when they actually start building it, and the third and biggest one is when they have finished it and people can touch it and feel it and see the benefits. So you stand the potential to gain the most as an investor if you buy when the announcement is made, but you're taking the risk that the political announcement will be delivered on, because quite often promises aren't kept. Probably the safest time to invest is when they actually start building it, because you're pretty sure it's going to go ahead and be finished, and the benefits will be felt. But most people, investors are essentially herd animals, so most people will wait till it's finished and then they say, oh, yeah, that's an influence. Maybe it'd be good to buy there. Well, the smart people would have bought, say, 2 years earlier and would be getting the most benefit. And that's one of the fundamental truths in investment. Most people don't get fantastic results because they're herd animals. They follow the herd, and by the time they buy, the boom's already well underway. The people who do best are the ones who buy ahead of the big upsurge, but they're relatively few. The people who have the wisdom and the foresight and the courage to actually run in the opposite direction to the pack. So, you know, smart people will be buying right now in Perth, but most people will wait until they read that the Perth market's rising before they even think of it.
Many will miss out by waiting until the herd goes in that direction.
The rise is inevitable, but most people aren't sufficiently well researched and sufficiently independent in their thinking to act upon that. I also think people are going to be amazed and surprised about Adelaide when the word finally gets out. We've been trying to convince people that Adelaide's a looming hotspot for all sorts of reasons that are happening in its local economy. People are very hard to convince about Adelaide. My next purchase will be there because I really believe in what's happening, and it's going to be very exciting. But as I say, most people are pack animals. They'll follow the herd when they read that there's a boom happening.
Coming up after the break, we'll learn about the mistakes often made in investing.
One of the problems is that people use media as their research medium, which is a huge mistake.
Hear Ryder's predictions for the Australian market.
I'm excited about what's happening in the South Australian economy.
Advice he'd give to his younger self.
I would have said to him to get busier with investment and to understand the importance of accumulation rather than trading.
All that and much more after the break. I'm Tyrone Shum and you're listening to Property Investory. There are many factors that affect whether or not a market will grow, including what's happening in other markets around Australia.
Perth's been going sort of slowly, gradually backwards through the period that Sydney and Melbourne have been booming. Perth's kind of been in retreat because of its links with the resources sector and the end of the previous resources investment boom. So prices are down, so great opportunity to buy as long as you believe that it's not going to go down any further, and I don't think it will. But the indicators now are that actually prices are rising. One of the problems is that people use media as their research medium, which is a huge mistake. One of the things media does is they generalise, so they'll produce one figure saying that Perth prices are down 2% in the last 12 months. Well, if you do it suburb by suburb as we do, you know that there are pockets within Perth that are already rising strongly, particularly the top end. And that's often at the beginning of a cycle. Most cycles start with the top end, not always, but mostly. And we're actually seeing strong price growth in Adelaide and Perth in the million-dollar suburbs, but not across the board. So that's an indicator that something's happening. The reduction in vacancy rates is another indicator. Quite often rents and vacancies are a precursor to price movements. That actually happened in Sydney. Prior to Sydney's getting on its growth path, about 2013, there were a couple of years where rents rose a lot, but prices didn't, and that was an indicator for the smart people that it was a good time to buy in Sydney. So we've seen vacancies drop in Perth to the point where they're now about 3% and falling. We're starting to see evidence of rental growth again, and we're seeing movement in the top end of the market. And we're also, in our quarterly research of demand figures, sales activity, we're seeing a big uplift in sales activity in Perth. So all of those things are telling us that Perth is ready to roll, and it's not going to fall any further. The underlying state economy has improved a lot. The resources sector is revitalising. Jobs are being created again. So pretty confident about Perth being a growth market moving forward. But now's the time to be looking there.
Yes.
And the mentoring client I mentioned earlier, who was frustrated because various attempts to purchase have been thwarted for various reasons. He's just now secured a property at a very good price and a good area in Perth, and I think it's going to turn out to be a very good investment for him.
Ryder has also mentioned Adelaide as a top hotspot for growth in coming years.
I do believe that real estate markets arise out of the local economies, and I'm excited about what's happening in the South Australian economy. It's got a reputation for being a low-growth state on population and income, but it's changing a lot. And in our daily collection of information, it just keeps coming through. You know, the Deloitte Access Economics, the BIS, Oxford Economics, those sorts of people, they do their, and the CommSec State of the States report, their quarterly reports are noting, for example, the rise in business confidence is higher in Adelaide than anywhere else in Australia. And many of these organisations are predicting South Australia to lead on economic growth in the next few years. And that's coming out of one of the things that I don't think people understand is that Adelaide is the high-tech innovation capital of Australia. We're constantly reading in our research that major businesses, many of them are global businesses, are moving their headquarters to Adelaide for that reason. But it seems to be flying under the radar screen of Australian media and Australian investors. Technicolor, I'm sure everybody is familiar with Technicolor, the part they play in movies. They're a business based in France, but they're setting up their Australian headquarters right now in Adelaide, creating hundreds of jobs. And they're going there because they recognise this is where it's happening for high-tech innovation in Australia. Australia's new space agency has been set up in Adelaide. Elon Musk, with his battery technology, he's set up his Australian operation in Adelaide. Now, there are dozens of examples like that, and it's really building a momentum. You know, the world is increasingly about technological innovation, and where is it happening in Australia? It's happening in Adelaide. And in addition to that, you've got the contracts for building vessels for the Navy, $90 billion worth, and it's starting right now. I mean, that's going to be massive for a city the size of Adelaide. For a city of any size, for Sydney it would be massive, but for Adelaide it's more so. So all of that's happening. Adelaide's also a strong resources state, and it's the national leader for alternative energy development, wind farms, solar farms, various hybrid renewable energy things. It's happening fundamentally in South Australia. So those are the reasons why I'm really excited about it, and I want, looking in Bendigo, as I mentioned, but the other place I'm looking for a next purchase is certain parts of the Adelaide market.
Ryder keeps himself responsible for his advice by revisiting his proposed hotspots every year.
The current edition of Money magazine, I still write for it, and in the February edition, I always write the top 50 property hotspots report, and part of that is we review how did our tips for last year go, and so that's part of the exercise each year when we write that feature. And when we looked at what we tipped last year, we actually did very well some of the locations that we suggested, because you know we look at the factors that we know drive real estate markets, and right now there's plenty of pumping places in Australia that the media is overlooking, because they tend to focus on the big cities. Regional Australia is where it's happening at the moment. That's where most of the growth markets right now are. Regional Victoria is going ballistic, regional Tasmania, parts of regional New South Wales, and increasingly regional Queensland starting to deliver growth markets, like Mackay is leading the comeback in central Queensland. The research that we do actually identifies these places, but you're not going to find out about it in the media, because all they want to write about is the downturn in Sydney. So.
Of course, because that's how they make money. Anyone talking about doom and gloom and the negative, that's what the media wants, because that's how they can sell more ads. But if you through that, you come to stuff that you do, gosh.
There are a lot. Yeah, well, it does create opportunity for businesses like yours and businesses like mine, because media is just not providing what people need in that space.
He shares some of the resources that helped him on his journey in investment and business.
Just a general philosophy of reading as much as you can. There's been a lot of real estate books written over the years. not all of them are great. And also some of the books to be read are not specifically real estate books. I'm just actually looking at my bookshelf in my office here. There's one I found great recently called The Answer, written by Ellen and Barbara Peace, other people who wrote the original book on body language, as they invented that concept that people might be familiar with. Very good book on how to, called The Answer, on how to go ahead with your goals and objectives in life. There's another one I'm looking at called Winners and How They Succeed by Alistair Campbell, who was the speechwriter for Tony Blair when he was Prime Minister of Great Britain. Those kind of books. I think developing a reading habit, reading those kinds of books, avidly, is a key to success in any sphere, but certainly in real estate, because you learn so much in any good book that you read. So I guess if I've had mentors, it's the authors of some of those books, and I've adopted some of those strategies to be more successful in business and in life generally.
Not all good advice is given directly face-to-face.
The best advice have come sort of indirectly from things that I've read, not from someone who's standing in front of me talking to me. I mentioned Warren Buffett. I quite often quote him in my reports on real estate because his philosophy is so relevant to real estate, fundamentally taking a long-term view, accumulation of good assets and keeping them. That's very much his philosophy. But probably the number one philosophy from Warren Buffett is that you do the opposite to the herd. You buy when others are selling and you sell when others are buying. And that's, I think, where real estate investors get it wrong the most. As I mentioned earlier, they just follow the herd. They read there's a boom on, they pile in. Whereas the Warren Buffett philosophy is you're doing the opposite to what the herd's doing. And I think that's fundamentally a very good philosophy. So that's where I think you get the best advice, by reading books by interesting people and successful people and understanding what they did, or the people they're writing them. The book Winners by Alistair Campbell, he's interviewed people who are renowned in business, in entertainment, in sport, all sorts of different spheres of life, but they have a kind of commonality of philosophy that permeates all those different fields of endeavour that make them winners, and hence the title of the book. So that's where I think you get the best advice on how to proceed.
If Terry Ryder could meet himself 10 years ago, he'd have this to say.
I would have said to him to get busier with investment, and to understand the importance of accumulation rather than trading, certainly those things. Back your judgment. I think I've probably a mistake I've made has been very good at making other people wealthy. People have followed my advice, particularly on location, have done well, and sometimes I think I'm too hesitant to follow my own advice, although it's probably more too busy running a business and doing other things to put the time in. So if I went back 10 years, that would be, I think, a change that I would make.
I love it. Hindsight, we always learn something from it, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. But it's never too late.
That's right.
No matter what stage of life you're at, you can make a beginning. But I think, the best advice for people out there is to start as early as you can, even in a very, very small way. Just get yourself on the path. You don't have to be in a hurry. You don't have to take big risks, but start as early as you can. And so by the time you get to, 40 and 50, you're already well down the path. And you're not, a lot of people are sort of suddenly wake up one day and saying, my God, I'm going to be retiring in 10 years. I better do something. It's just so much better and easier if you got started when you're in your 20s, even if it means you've got to make some sacrifices. Maybe you can't go out with your mates to the nightclubs as often as you'd like, but it's worth making a few compromises and sacrifices to get going. You'll benefit in the long run.
While he has no intention of stopping, Ryder is looking forward to slowing down a little in the next few years.
Over the next 5 years, I think it's being able to throttle back a little bit, have the business set up so that I don't have to be involved as much, although, I mean, I've got no concept of retirement. I want to be the Dave in Attenborough of real estate research, I think. He's out there at the age of 91, still doing what he loves as enthusiastically as he was when he was in his 30s. And I intend to be the same, but I'd like to be able to have the option to be a little less involved, because if I've got things up set up exactly the way I want them, my real estate portfolio humming along and allowing me to write more books and travel as often as I'd like to.
He believes some luck and a lot of skill and education have contributed to his success.
I think it's probably 75 skill, hard work, and 25% luck. Luck always plays a part, but I really think that there's very few people who succeed the way they wish to succeed in life, and that's not all measured in terms of monetary gains, all sorts of ways of measuring success, but I think luck is a relatively minor component of any successful life. I'm reading, as I've indicated, about success stories all the time, and they all have elements of tragedy and hard work and reversals and believing they're never going to make it, but persistence and hard work is the common denominator of all people who've ever got to where they want to go. So luck's a component, but it's not a big one.
If you wish to get in contact with Terry Ryder, here's the easiest way to do so.
They can contact me directly by email, Ryder, R-Y-D-E-R, at hotspotting.com.au. Always happy to respond to people's questions and inquiries. They can phone the hotspotting office, 07-549-42575. There are also chat facilities on the website. There's a live chat thing that's available during the day, and quite often they can talk directly to me via that. So there's all sorts of ways they can touch base. They can get on our free newsletter mailing list, and that's a good way to start out and get an idea of the sorts of information we send out before they actually have to spend any money on the reports that identify the future hotspots. And we have an increasing presence via social media, particularly on Facebook. I'm doing every Tuesday night I do Hotspot of the Week, which is a live broadcast, live Q&A once a month. Thursdays I do what I call my War on Media Misinformation. That's a very broad topic. So there's all those ways that they can sort of engage with us. And, the Facebook thing's a great way because people, sort of can identify with that and they can key in a question or just follow a live broadcast and respond via that medium.
I'd like to say a huge thank you to Terry Ryder for joining us on this episode of Property Invest Story. If you want to hear more about his journey, please visit our website at propertyinvestory.com.